And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I am doing tremendous, Blake, because the college football video game is officially out if you got the MVP Plus membership. Look at me doing a read for an ad that we don't actually have. You can play it tomorrow at 2 p.m. So I paid for that. And I'm going to make sure I wake up early tomorrow, get all of my work done so that I can play the game when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I ain't paying $150+ for a video game. It's just
I'm going to be sending you videos of me playing and you're going to change your mind.
No, I won't. I'll just play the old one. I'll just play the old one. I can wait a couple of days. See, here's the thing. I don't play it as much as like you or like others, so it doesn't necessarily like okay, I probably should have just done it just to say whatever and have it. But I just, it does, you know, like, it doesn't really bother me, man. You know, like, I can do it. Now, would it be fun? Yeah. I mean, but I always remember that there's a lot of kinks that got to get worked out. And you got to download the game after, like, 2 days anyway because stuff is, like, legitimately breaking in on the game. Remember last year when was it last year or 2 years ago? Ahmad Hardy had 99 spin and nobody could tackle him on the game.
No, it was Judkins. It was Quinshon Judkins. People were spamming the spin move. And so every single time you tried to tackle him, he would just like keep spinning and you couldn't tackle him. Yeah, that was bad.
So I'm going to wait. Also, if I got to wait until Tuesday, by all means, I'm okay with it. It does stink. I got five more days that I'd have to wait, but it's okay. Here's the likely truth, by the way. I'm probably going to forget. Unless you remind me, I probably will forget, but it's going to be fun nevertheless. You know what I do? I like playing with teams early in the season because for us, and just to get a feel of their roster better. You know, like that's when I grew up. Joe, I knew everybody's roster because how much I played the game. I used to play it religiously, like stop to start to finish. And I like doing that even now to kind of get a feel about what I would do in a coach's situation. I know that seems dumb, but it's definitely what I do.
Well, and I think that everybody that fell in love with football in general can attest to this. When I was like 12, that was when I first started getting into watching football. And the way that I learned every single roster front to back and was able to tell you if a guy was good or not was based on me remembering who was on what roster and what their overall was. I don't do that now because, and I probably wouldn't do it for the college football stuff because a lot of the ratings, now that I watch so much film and I do so much research on these teams, that when I get these rankings out and I look and see, for example, I got pissed off that Arch was as low as he was. I can't align with these ratings. A lot of times I get annoyed by it. My big love for the game is playing dynasty mode and just, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line building a dynasty with like Virginia Tech, or I did it with UCLA 1 year. It's like picking that school that's in a good region but it's not that good of a team, you know, doing it that way.
I can't do anything less than a 3-star. I get aggravated.
You don't want the challenge?
It's not that I don't want the challenge, it's that you can't recruit.
That is true. I think I told you this before. When I was doing my Virginia Tech dynasty and I did it for like 5 years, I won 3 national titles and I still couldn't recruit. I still was getting like, I'd have these kids that were like interested and then they'd pick Georgia. They'd pick Ohio State. They'd pick Michigan. Like I would get lockered by all the big programs. I hope the new game isn't like that, but that was,
you know what I did? I was the OC of Georgia. Here, I'm going to finally come out with it.
Okay.
I was the OC for the University of Georgia for 2 years and built my status up very high.
This is what I do too.
So that when I picked a team to go to, like it was undeniable. Like talent developer, recruiter, and tactician, there was nothing that you could do to stop me. And so therefore, if I didn't get a kid, I would just, and here's what I did too. I turned the portal stuff way down for both sides, for computer and for user. That because I wanted the development to happen. You know, like there was some, because I feel like even last year in the game, like kids were hitting, like too many big names were hitting the portal. Like as an example, every single dynasty that I ever played in, Isaac Brown hit the portal. Now he did it this year and I get it, but I just wanted the development. Now I did grab Cam Coleman. I am coming up to a situation where Notre Dame has fired Marcus Freeman. Okay.
Does happen a lot. I don't like that. I've noticed that happens frequently where he gets fired. I think that is.
Yeah. He went 8-4. He got fired. So if here's the real question before I get to Tuesday, we move on from this segment. Mm-hmm. If Notre Dame offers Blake Ruffino, who is currently at Texas Christian University, do I go to Notre Dame?
Now, I kind of think that when you go to the big brands, it gets a little too easy. Yeah, I think you say it's so
Notre Dame. I'm going to lose every single game and take a picture of it and send it to you and say I'm the reason
that Notre Dame. Well, you're going to send it to me, and then I'm going to send back to you that, I have the new game. So I'm going to win that one.
By the way, have you seen a lot of the new graphics? I saw a guy do an LSU dynasty.
Yeah, dude, they look incredible. Both games. Madden looks really good. This is the best that the game's ever looked.
I'm ready for it. I can just wait until Tuesday to get it. That's the only thing. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, we're live. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share to all those groups. We're not on Facebook, but take that YouTube link, share to all those groups. Subscribe down below if you are on YouTube. We're on our path to hitting that 40,000 mark, so do us a favor. Hit that subscribe button and notification bell. Joe, I was looking at our analytics today. Did you know that 61% of people that watch all of our videos, 61.3% are not subscribed? A lot of you think that you're subscribed. You're not subscribed. So do us a favor, hit the like and share, subscribe down below. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're watching on 24/7 Sports, hit that retweet button as well. Also, glad to be powered and partnered by our good friends over at 24/7 Sports. You can use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. So much recruiting news is flying off the shelves right now. You're going to need to be in the know as things continue to move forward. Joe, a lot of buzz coming out about Jalen Brewster over the last couple of days. Jalen Brewster and LSU starting to, like each other a little bit more. Well, you can go find out over at Go 24/7, but 24/7 in general. You can use that promo code RJ60 at checkout to get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. All right. So tonight we're talking about top five DCs in the game. We'll talk about the University of Houston and do a deep dive on them. Spoiler alert, they are my team, my dark horse team in the Big 12 to win it all, meaning the Big 12, not win a national title. But I do like Willie Fritz and dark horse Heisman picks. We start off with our top five defensive coordinators in college football as of right now. Joe DeLeon, take it away. Who are your top five defensive coordinators?
Yeah, I got to catch my breath because I know that this is going to be intense, because anyone who watched the OC show, which I didn't have a good list. I admit now that I had a bad list. I'm going to change my list, but hopefully we don't get into a shouting match. To also get ahead of this, I put my list together before even looking at Blake's, so there are some similarities here. Number one, I've got Phil Parker from Iowa. Number two, I've got Bryant Haynes from Indiana. Number three, I've got Matt Patricia from Ohio State. Four, I'm going with Corey Heatherman from Miami. And lastly, I am taking Sheil Wood from Texas Tech.
Just to remind very quickly, I have Phil Parker as well. Me and you have the top four. I have Phil Parker, Brian Haynes, Matt Patricia, Corey Heatherman. And at number five, I have Blake Baker. Joe, I kick it over to you first. Now that your list actually looks nice and you're not just throwing stuff at the ether, where do you want to start off?
Okay.
I feel like we do this every year and we start off with Phil Parker. This is what I'd say very quickly. We love Phil Parker. I'm also tired of having the same conversations about Phil Parker. He's the only reason that they're winning games. Yes, he deserves his flowers. I get all that. But at the same time, there's only so many things that we can say about Phil Parker. We've done this the last, 4 years now. He deserves his flowers. Love Phil Parker. Great DC. Should be a Hall of Fame coach. Is a Hall of Fame coach. I just don't know what else to say about him when we go about it.
Yeah, just to get Phil Parker out of the way, because there's really not an extensive conversation to have about him, because you're right. you could go back and watch every single DC rankings list that we've done on this show over the past 3 years, and Phil Parker's been number one. And the reason why isn't just because he's a tremendous defensive coordinator. It's the fact that Iowa doesn't recruit in the same realm as the elites of college football. They don't. For the most part, Phil Parker has gotten the most out of 3- and 4-star kids. Have there been 5-star guys that have come in there? Yes, they've had the Xavier Nwankwas of college football, you 5-star safety. Yeah, AJ Epinesa was a highly recruited kid. They've brought in highly recruited kids before, but he has maximized prospects that were to a degree unheralded. Cooper DeJean is a really good example. If I recall correctly, I'm going to check in a second. He was a 3-star recruit, and he turned him into a multi-use defensive weapon, and now he is one of the best defensive backs in the NFL. It's just the creativity and the understanding of how to be physical and to win through physicality and to do it on such a consistent basis makes it a no-brainer. Two quick stats that make this also simple and easy. Last year, they were 9th.
By the way, he was a top 50 player. He came out as a safety on 24/7 Sports.
I might be mixing him. No, his brother's also was very highly recruited as well. So I'm mixing him up with somebody else. But he's not like he was the number 2 ranked safety in the country. He wasn't like a big, big, huge name kid. But
he also was a safety. He came out as a safety, which is even crazy.
He became a corner and kick returner, and he played all over the place in that Iowa defense. So it's a no-brainer. I don't think that anyone should really have any qualms with that, because as much as there are other great defensive coaches who statistically might have performed better last year, he has been doing it the most steady over his course of leading the Hawkeyes.
Look, they had a top 10 defense again last year. They were 9th in total defense a season ago. They are just so good at what they do. Their system is put in place. They develop from within. Do I think that there are times, Joe, where it's like every other year they're dominant defensively? Yes. You know, 2 years ago now, they took a little bit of a step back to what their standard was, right? But then they come back and they're a top 10 total defense. I do always wonder, you know, we were talking about the college sports video game earlier. When Kurt Ferentz left, as an example, and retired, your boy at TCU picked up Phillip Parker as your boy's DC. You better believe I did. He's just so good. And I always have wondered what would happen if he did have the Oregon defense, the Georgia defense, the Miami talent defense, the Texas talent defense. What would actually happen? Schematically, they play within the system. They're always elite at playing inside that system. And he will go down as one of the best DCs ever. And so I look at him and say, he's always going to be number one if he continues to do what he's doing. I'm sure that he is more out the door than in the door, right, his career. So needs to be cherished. But Joe, it's just, I don't want to have the same talking point that me and you constantly use where, God, if they had an offense, what could they do? Yeah, you're right. What could they do? What could they do? What does Ferentz have on him? That's what I want to know. Why have you stayed there that long? I mean,
that's the best question about this is why hasn't he left? Why hasn't he taken a head coaching job?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really care about the head coaching job. I care more about, like, you've never wanted to test yourself. You know, I almost put him at 2. Can I tell you why? Because I'm like, you've never really wanted to go and test yourself at a bigger program. You know, like, just to mix something up doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve it to be at number one, because he deserves to be at number one. He is good for him. All right, where do you want to go next? I kind of wanted to go to Corey Heatherman because you and I had a debate on him last year. Mm-hmm. I wanted to watch and see what he did. And boy, did Corey Heatherman last year not disappoint. That Miami defense was phenomenal. You were all over him. Corey Heatherman is a dude and on the fast track to becoming a head coach very soon. I love Corey Heatherman. I got to be real with you. Indiana and Haynes, I was close to putting Heatherman at 2 because I felt as if that their playoff run was a little bit more difficult than what Indiana kind of had to go through. And when you talk about Ole Miss, when you talk about going on the road to Texas A&M, when you talk about having to do some of the things that having to go up against Ohio State, They shut all of those teams down in the playoff. I didn't, but boy, do I wish that I should. I really debated putting Heatherman above Matt Patricia, but Matt Patricia year one had the number one total defense in the country, so he's got to be up there too. I would just say this, 2, 3, and 4 for me, put them in any specific order, but yeah. Corey Heatherman's made a name for himself, that's for sure.
So my logic behind the ordering, without going too deep into these guys, because I'm sure that we'll talk on all of them, Bryant Haynes, I think, has to be number two because the fact that he's done it back-to-back years with a pretty under-recruited roster. It's not like that they've got a lot of big names and they've been elite. Matt Patricia, I think, gets the nod because not only was he an elite college defensive coordinator, but he was also an elite NFL defensive coordinator. And I think that despite everybody doubting him, we were reminded that he is a brilliant, brilliant mind, and he just had a couple rough years. Patricia and Heatherman are two guys at the beginning of last year that, you know, everyone likes to bring up all the wrong takes that we have. Those are two that I love to put my arm up in the air and say, I called these ones out. I said that Patricia was going to be a great hire. I said that Heatherman was also going to be a great hire. I pointed out that just like I always bring up, that when I was playing at Rhode Island, we went up against Kurt Cignetti. We also went up against Corey Heatherman when he was at Maine. And that Maine team, that Maine defense, that was what carried him. They had some dudes on that team. They were physical. We couldn't move the ball on them. Heatherman moved up the ranks rapidly. And that to me is always a quick signal of, oh, this dude's tapped. This dude knows what he's doing and other coaches are recognizing what he's capable of. The biggest part with this, and I know that you're going to talk about Blake Baker for the transformation for the LSU defense from how bad they were 2 years ago to back-to-back years of being good. Heatherman did that to me on steroids because I recall when Cam Ward was at Miami, how ass their secondary was. They were bad. They were really bad. We got to remind ourselves, they were giving up so many big plays that it cost them a chance at the college football playoff. They could not get out of their own way defensively. You know what Heatherman did? He came in and he instilled a technically sound mentality that showed up every single week. They were winning by overwhelming opponents, but they were also winning by keeping everything in front of them, by tackling, and by finishing. And that was the big reason why during the season last year, when I said Miami will get to a national championship after they started the season hot, was that they had the defense to get them there. I just overlooked how much Carson Beck was going to shoot them in the foot in some big games. But Heatherman, it wouldn't shock me if we're not talking about him in like 2 years when Phil Parker retires or whenever. I don't know if that'll be in 2 years or not, but if in 2 years we're saying Corey Heatherman's the best DC in college football, it wouldn't surprise me.
In reference to Blake Baker underhand, he also didn't have Reuben Bain, Mazador, Moten in that front seven. Blake Baker didn't have one guy drafted in the front seven, and I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay.
There is an interesting situation here. Actually, I feel like I got it wrong. I think I'd put Corey Heatherman ahead of Matt Patricia. Both of them had the same amount of first-round talent on their team. One carried the other, Joe, if we're being blunt. I mean, that defense last year played with an attitude. Now, they ultimately, you know, recruited from within and then went out and got some really good players from the portal. They're just so physical. And I think that when I look at him, he's not trying to ever recreate the wheel. You know, like when you look at Heatherman defensively, like, so I'm doing this segment starting next week about watching all of the Ole Miss games. And I went to that Ole Miss Miami game. Joe, they're not really dropping in coverages. They're dropping in spots. And I think that Heatherman is different in reference to understanding the schematics of what his opponents want to do and trying to get home with four. They don't send a lot of pressure, but they're very physical. Their safeties are in the box a lot. They put a lot of faith in all of their dudes. And I think Heatherman is just, he brought a sort of attitude that we saw Mario Cristobal have on the sidelines. He is a top four, top three defensive coordinator. He deserves his flowers. This defense, again, is going to be really dominant, even with a lot of the departures that they do have. But they have the ability to be just as good. Like, I don't – you said this the other night, and it's so true. Damon Wilson is being slept on. And I think that with the speed that we saw of Mesidor and Scott and company, he used Scott in a lot of unique ways last year off the edge. I mean, Joe, how many times were we coming here during the playoffs and like, dude, you got to check Scott on the end line of scrimmage. We talked about during the season, like, hey, as an offensive lineman or a center, if he's right there on the end line of scrimmage, I'm accounting for him. Like, as much as they sent him, he just knew. I felt like a lot of times, I mean, him and Charlie Weiss really went at it. I mean, and I thought that was a fantastic game. But it always felt like that he was going to get his. And he did such a fantastic job, and he deserves to be on this list.
Here's my only thing, as you're adjusting on the fly and you think that Heatherman should be at 2 over Patricia. I have to push back on that because I think that Heatherman has done a tremendous job at every stop that he's been at. And again, I've had firsthand experience of being on a field when he was coaching. I think that Patricia's success at the NFL level and how quickly it translated to the college level shows only a glimpse of what this Ohio State defense is capable of. I feel like
they're going to take a step back now. I mean,
wait, no, hold on. I disagree with that. I don't think that Ohio State's defensively going to take a step. Wait, hold on, Blake. This is a big reason why I am bought into and why I want to stay firm on Matt Patricia being number 2 on my list, because 2 years ago, we spent the whole offseason talking about how they lost everything. They lost JT Tuimoloau. They lost Jack Sawyer. They lost all these really important, good players, and it didn't mean anything.
Yeah, they, but 3 first-round picks returning.
Wait. No, hold on. Sonny Styles was a really good prospect, and people recognized how good he was, but it was not a sure thing that he was a first-round pick. Caleb Downs was the sure thing at first in the first round. No one knew who Cade McDonald was. Nobody knew who Arvel Reese was. For the first month of the show, we were calling him Avril Reese. We were calling him the wrong name because nobody knew who he was. He capitalized on finding and identifying the right talent and then maximizing that talent in such a unique way that they comically dominated their entire schedule. Now, they lost in the Big Ten championship game and to Miami in the playoff because Hartline was an ass play caller. He was not a good play caller. He cost them. That was the issue. But to be first in yards allowed and first in opponent turnovers as well as 6th in EPA per play, I think goes to show how consistently dominant that they were defensively.
Just because we didn't know doesn't change the fact that they were. You had 4 top 40 picks.
We can't give them credit for coaching those guys up. 2 guys into high draft picks that were unknown.
Do we not give Ryan Day more of the credit for recruiting those dudes and developing? Because he didn't develop them to be first-round picks in 6 months. It's not how that works.
I get that, but at the same time,
40 picks.
You can't get 0 credit for that.
First and foremost, they are going to take a step back. Anytime that you have 4 top 40 picks, you're going to take a step back. You know, Joe, this isn't even an opinion at Matt Patricia. You know who else does that too? His name was Saban. When Saban would do that, their defenses would take a step back. You're saying that Matt Patricia will not with that schedule.
I don't think Saban's defenses took – I'm not saying that they're going to stay exactly the same exactly where they were, but my point is that he just proved that they're capable of coaching up a unit no matter what. And if anything – they're bringing back a lot of guys that can do the same thing that Reese and McDonald and Sonny Styles just did.
They've got
Kenyatta Jackson, and they have a number of other pieces across the board that are Devin Jackson, who we've talked about a lot. There are guys that were 5-star guys that are coming up that are also going to be first rounders very soon.
Okay. I disagree with the fact that if you would have come out and said that, sure, they may not be the number one team in total defense, well, that is taking a step back. I'm not saying they're going to be bad, but I also look at Corey Heatherman and say that they might even be better. Like, they might have lost dudes, and they might be better with Lightfoot, with Wilson, with bringing back the 2 interior defensive tackles. If you're going to talking about development, if they're better, that's more of the development from within. I mean, this dude legitimately took a freshman corner in a national title game in Jabari Antoine, and the kid had 3 PBUs. I mean, with okay, all
he's not controlling him. He's not like that.
Matt Patricia's not controlling Caleb Downs and all of the elite stuff that he did. You're one, Joe. I'm sorry to tell you. Yes, they had an elite year, but if I walk into a situation with four first round picks, I want to see it again. Joe, hold on now. You keep saying for letting you to talk. Well, hold on.
Sorry. Okay.
So if you're going to sit here and tell me that having four first round picks, and I know about McDonough, I'm just saying that they're not taking a step back and that I want to see it. I don't think that that is by any stretch of the imagination far. I have them in my top five because of how great that they were. But at the same time, I want to see him stack. I want to see him stack. There were situations last season, Miami, when they got bullied. They got bullied. In the run game, they were getting pushed. So we're kind of, in some degree, fighting over semantics here. He deserves to be in the top five. But they're going to take a step back. You don't have four elite dudes on your defense, and I understand that. That's not a slight at him. I expect them to. They should. They should. I just want to see him stack it again. What do you do without those four elite players is my question.
Okay, but what I was trying to jump in and say here, I think that the logic there doesn't work for the argument you're trying to create because Miami is in an identical situation. So, we've talked about both teams in their previews and how they're going to both not really lose much because they've got five stars that are coming up to replace the guys that are leaving. They're identical in terms of their circumstance. They're in the same exact boat. They both had elite players that got drafted really early, and now they both have five-star guys that are coming up on their defensive line and in their secondary and so
forth. Heatherman did it at Minnesota, and the last time the previous coaching stop that we saw with Patricia, he got fired.
But that doesn't have to do anything with the quality of coach that he is right now. He was a really bad NFL head coach. He was not meant to be an NFL head coach, and he was then an assistant. He was an analyst that got promoted mid-season with the Eagles. He was in a really bad situation. And I don't think that he got fired from that job technically.
No, he went back to the Patriots and got fired.
And he was holding a weird role there too. He was like he would call plays on offense at one point, if I recall correctly.
Fair. I'd still put Heatherman ahead of him. Look, that schedule's brutal. What's going to happen? I mean, that schedule is brutal. I mean, Joel, to be a little blunt with you, they kind of had a cakewalk, and the two teams that they played, they didn't win.
But it wasn't nothing to do with their defense. They gave up 17 points to Miami.
No, it wasn't anything to do with their defense. They still lost. That defense still got bullied versus Miami. I mean, Joe, the truth of the matter was, we can say whatever we want to. That Miami team lined up and busted that ass wide open. No pause. They busted that ass. So, again, and on both lines of scrimmage now, Joe, don't tell me they didn't bust that ass. They busted that ass. Like from the 99 to the 2000s.
Okay. They didn't allow anything through the air, but yeah, they did give up some big run plays. Yeah, before we get to the Houston preview, we got to address that you and I have differences at number five.
All right,
want Blake Baker, and I have Shield Wood. So I was putting this list together. I'm going to be quite honest with you. When I was doing my notes and stuff, again, I had not looked at your list. You texted it to me, and I didn't even look at it because I didn't want it to influence my decision-making. I was fully preparing to have Blake Baker on here as my fifth guy or in some different order that I had put together. But the more that I dug into last year's stats and performance, I couldn't find myself not putting Shield Wood on here, who is Texas Tech's defensive coordinator, for two reasons. Statistically, they were comically dominant. They were third in yards allowed, first in EPA per play allowed, first in havoc plays, third in opponent turnovers. So they were forced a ton of turnovers. They were disruptive. They caused headaches and problems every single game. They mauled opposing teams. I think what was incredibly unique, though, about what Shield Wood did is that they brought in a lot of really raw, unheralded players, and he turned those guys into stars. He turned Romello Height into a star. He turned David Bailey into a top five pick. We've got Roberts coming back, who's going to be a top five linebacker. You've got Pollock coming back, who's going to be a top 10 corner. Across the board, he activated and created a lot of players that were completely unknown across the college football world and turned them into premier pieces within that defense. I think that Blake Baker has had more talent to work with, and I'm fine with saying that Blake Baker is my sixth best defensive coordinator because I will probably move him up after statistically we see him have a year where they're not 30th, but they're top 10. I gotta have a top 10 year out of Blake Baker if I'm going to put him in a top five list.
I think what Blake Baker needs is context. Okay. I don't think Shield doesn't deserve to be on your five, nor am I going to fight you on it because I don't think it's egregious at all. What happens when your offense in 12 straight weeks can barely pass the 50?
I knew you were going to bring this up. It's a fair point.
I mean, like, Joe, if we're being blunt, they didn't have a defensive lineman drafted. You talk about developing, A.J. Halsey and Mansoor Delane say hello. I mean, he finally got the most out of Harold Perkins more than anybody. He's taken two SEC programs whose defenses were in the hundreds and put them in the top 30. I say top 30 because LSU was at 27. Missouri was the top 8 defense when he left. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the two times that he had to go somewhere, that you had defenses in the hundreds, could barely muster great defensively. He gets both of them into the top 30. And the question I have for LSU is if Garrett Nussmeier and Brian Kelly had a pulse, what happens? Because here's the real truth. They almost beat Oklahoma. If they had any pulse on offense, they beat them. They could have beaten Alabama because their defense held them down. They had no offensive pulse. Garrett Nussmeier got benched in that game. They could barely pass the 50-yard line, and they were in the game. They almost beat Ole Miss. Garrett Nussmeier threw in the triple coverage twice, got picked off, could not throw the ball to save his life, barely got past the 50-yard line. The defense had to generate points. To beat Florida, they had to have 5 interceptions just to get out of there. At what point are we going to look at Blake Baker and say, yeah, the only reason LSU won 7 games last year is because the defense was generating points?
I don't disagree.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't disagree that Baker has done miracle work in order to get that team competitive. And Kiffin was smart and justified for bringing him back.
Oh, without a doubt. By the way, Kiffin, just so we're blunt, I told you we're doing this series. Over the last 5 years, guess who the defensive coordinator at Missouri and at LSU was the only person to hold Lane Kiffin under 25 points, not once, not twice, but 3 times. Nick didn't do it. Kirby didn't do it. Sark and Texas haven't done it. Texas A&M hasn't done it. Joe, nobody's done it. By the way, when you talk about P4 programs, nobody's done it other than Blake Baker. So again, I know the justification. Hey, I can't score.
Again, I don't disagree. And I'm not saying this is a means to drag him down and say that he's unqualified. I just want to have a season where they're in the top 10 in most statistical categories, because that is the one similarity between all the 4 or 5 other guys that I have brought up, is that they all were in the top at least 15 statistically in key categories. Blake Baker, the only category that he was top 10 in was EPA per play allowed. He was 31st in havoc plays, 23rd in opponent turnovers, and 27th in yards allowed. I think that this year is going to be a year that changes it, though. And I think by the
three in time of possession on field, though.
That's why I think that it's going to be a different story next year and that we'll be having a completely different discussion.
I agree. All right, let's move on here. Joe, we continue on our path talking about Big 12 teams and doing deep dive on those teams. I'm going to start off this segment by making Houston fans love me. I think you're the dark horse team in the Big 12. Everybody's talking about Texas Tech. Everybody's talking about BYU. Everybody wants to talk about Brendan Sorsby. Everybody wants to talk about Cody Campbell. Willie Fritz in Houston's just sitting there. And Joe, I got to be completely blunt with you. I think they're primed and ready to make a run in the Big 12. Your thoughts, when you told me today that we were talking about Houston, I've been keeping this one close to the vest. I love Willie Fritz. Joe, teams around the Big 12 have kind of come out of nowhere. Everybody talking about BYU being that team that can test Texas Tech. My question is it the University of Houston and Willie Fritz going into year three? What are your thoughts on the Cougars?
Yeah, I think that everything you just said is absolutely true here. And I almost don't even want to call them a dark horse because I just think they're really good.
Season. I mean, I hate to say that, but here's the thing, John. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I got to be real with you. When we start doing our previews, I don't know if I don't have Houston in my Big 12 title game and not BYU.
Yeah, I feel like that there's a lot of reason to buy in, and I think it will be a battle between BYU and Houston for a lot of the same reasons that I hyped up BYU in the BYU preview is Houston brings back a lot of talent and a lot of experienced talent. They have 12 returning starters, which is third in the Big 12. They're fifth in the country in total snaps, second in offensive snaps, 17th in defensive snaps. They're second in starts returning. They're third in wide receiver snaps returning, 10th in tight end snaps returning, and 12th in offensive line snaps returning. They have everything that you're looking for in a team that has been growing and improving over multiple years and is finally ready to show and prove what they're capable of. Willie Fritz has been a program builder. The way that he was able to build up Tulane into a consistent winner to the point where after he left, they got to the college football playoff. He deserves a lot of credit for that. I think that he's ready to do that at Houston. Connor Weigman, he was fine last year, but as a former five-star guy that got NFL looks, he should be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. Mari Thomas was super productive. I'm a very big fan of Shadre Hurst, who came over from Tulane. Yeah. He was a former Fritz player who is small for a guard, but will get underneath your pads and completely demolish you.
Ask Ole Miss how they liked him.
Yeah. So seriously, he went to work. They've got two portal guys that, from what I read, per Zenitz and Hummer of CBS Sports, that have the opportunity to be real big-time playmakers, Patrick Overmeyer and Jalen Mayo, a corner from Stephen F. Austin. I think both those guys could be high draft picks and are going to be key pieces. Like, I could sit here and keep naming reasons to buy in. They have everything that they need. They have experience coming back. They have five transfers coming in with at least 700 career snaps. But the last piece with this, I was genuinely annoyed last year when people were crapping all over Mekhi Hughes because he wasn't playing. And everybody said he was a bust. He sucks. I don't think that was fair on him. I think that he went to a team that Oregon didn't expect, that their young guys, their true freshmen, with Dyer, with Hill, and oh my God, who am I? I'm losing my mind on the names of the running backs at Oregon. Didn't have the opportunity to play. And I think that Mekhi Hughes in the Big 12 will play at a very, very high level. And I think that he can go right back to what he did at Tulane. And I can't wait for him to prove everybody wrong.
So obviously you were talking about Davison and Hill.
Yes.
From Oregon.
Yes. Yes. Jordan Davis. That was who I was thinking of.
One thunder, one lightning. You got to love it. I agree with the Mekhi Hughes thing before I get rolling here. Now, under Willie Fritz, Mekhi Hughes in the two seasons had, I'm rounding up anymore from now on. If a dude's got 2,790 yards, I'm rounding up. Okay. He had 2,800 rushing yards under Fritz, with 22 touchdowns in the 2 years that he was at Tulane. Yes, it didn't work out with Oregon. So what? The question about what Houston is going to be, you're having to replace, in my humble opinion, outside of Tre'Davious Green, arguably one of the more freakier tight ends in the country in Kozel. That dude is a freak. How he went as late as he did in the draft is beyond me. I think it's because of his run blocking ability. That's neither here nor there. However, who's Connor Weigman going to be? Now, later when you and I do dark horses for Heisman, I'm going to bring up and kind of make you do a quarterback blind test because okay. I do think it's going to really like shock you when we do dark horse Heismans, okay? Did you know that there was a quarterback in the Big 12 not named? Hammond last year that had 30 plus touchdowns. Do you know that there was a quarterback in the Big 12, not named Shedeur Sanders? I get it was 2 years ago that almost broke a Big 12 record in rushing touchdowns in the red zone. His name was Connor Weigman. Did you know that Connor Wigman last year threw for 25 touchdowns and ran for 11? And I think people forget just how good he was down the stretch. You know, there was a lot of talk about Wigman struggling because he threw a lot of interceptions in some big games, and he is going to have to figure that out. Joe, I got a hot take for you. He reminds me a little bit of a former Texas A&M quarterback transfer that I would say went to a lower school, but boy, he got some dog in him. You know, the last time that I saw a Texas A&M quarterback transfer to a lower level school, a school that historically doesn't have massive success, well, he went to Georgia Tech and his name was Hayes King, and he wound up having 36 touchdowns. He wound up throwing 14 interceptions, and then he comes back the very next year, and Joe, we're looking up and they're in quadruple overtime versus Georgia, and you're like, holy Hayes King, everybody loves him. Is that about to be Connor Wigman? Because all I see is this dude getting the ball into the end zone. All I see is this dude continuing to progress. 700 rushing yards a year ago with 11 touchdowns and 25 passing touchdowns. Now, he's got to be better in decision-making. But I love the fact that Wigman returns, Amari Thomas at wide receiver returns, had 12 receiving touchdowns a season ago. I'm a little bit shocked that he didn't wind up hitting the portal, maybe because Houston just has money. The main question for me with them is along their offensive line. You have four guys that you had to go in the portal and get. And the question is, can you protect Connor Wigman? Because we know that when he gets pressured, that he has the perplexity to turn the ball over. But a lot like Hayes King, a former Texas A&M quarterback transfer, is he going to be able to take that next step for me will ultimately be the question. Defensively, I love that Webb and Jordan Allen return at safety. Joe, I feel like we're having a little bit of the same conversations with a lot of these Big 12 teams, ironically speaking, because even when we talk about Texas Tech, we talk about BYU, and now we talk about Houston, where's the pass rush going to come from? Where is the pass rush going to come from? You know, we could even look at Utah. John Henry Daly's not there. He's at Michigan now. A lot of the edge presence along or in the Big 12 is no longer there, whether it be draft or portal. My question would be, I love what you have in the second level. I love what you have in the third level. You talked about Mayo from Stephen F. Austin. By the way, is a cover king. If, for those who watch Southland Conference football, shout out to the LSU New Orleans Pioneers. Joe didn't really like it earlier when that announcement happened. But regardless, I think they're going to be really solid defensively, and I think Willie Fritz is going to have a really good team to build off of. And here comes the Willie Fritz special yet again. Sneaks up on you, has a 10-win year, and all of a sudden, just like he did at Tulane, with a lot of experience, you talk about those 12 starters returning. I don't know, Joe. I think this team can make some noise in the Big 12.
I just think at the end of the day, unless you're dealing with a situation where you had – like, this isn't an Oklahoma State from a couple of years ago where they brought back a lot of starters. They brought back most of their offensive line. And I called out in that preview, in the Oklahoma State preview, I was like, hey, that offensive line was not good. Just because all those guys are coming back does not make this team good. And it was kind of the circumstance where Gundy just was not equipped for the current college football landscape. So he just brought back all the same guys. And they were ass because Alan Bowman wasn't very good and a million problems. But this Houston team has the formula for being one of the top teams in their conference because it molds to me two things that work in the sport. If you build purely through the transfer portal, but you're not getting guys that are experienced, that is what I think has led to a lot of teams completely collapsing and falling apart that overly rely on the transfer portal. If you rely too heavily on keeping your guys and building around those guys and you don't go in the transfer portal, you end up being Dabo. They're mixing having those 12 returning starters, and then I'm reemphasizing a point that I brought up earlier. They added five transfers with at least 700 career snaps.
That's so much. That is so many snaps.
I know. And I think that
really Fritz special. Dude, he did that at Tulane when the portal was big. He went and killed the Southland Conference. He destroyed the Southland Conference. He would go and get as many transfers from the South. Joe, what was it the year at Tulane? Forgive me the year. I don't remember how many. I'm going to bring up a number. It's probably not even true. I felt like that he went and got like four Southland Conference first team All-Americans. Mm-hmm. All conference players. and they wind up starting for him at Tulane that year. They made the the playoff. The year they beat Caleb Williams and USC in the bowl. Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, he's doing it again. I've been up close and personal seeing him do it. He's going to do it again. I will say this too, to your point. I do wonder if Brandon Mack at end and edge is going to be able. He had 5 sacks last year. Talk about snaps returning. As a backup to some extent early in the season, Joe, he's in that category with a lot of snaps, and he was on the team that you didn't have to bring in. He was already coming back.
Right. And you have a lot of production on defense too that I think is incredibly underrated to this. The one guy I mentioned earlier that I think could be like a real riser in the draft community and in the college football space is Jalen Mayo, the corner I discussed. He's an over 6'1" corner from Stephen F. Austin. And per Zenitz and Hummer, and then I also texted a few people because I was like, huh, all right, who is this Mayo kid? Who is he? And they echoed the belief that he could be a day 2 pick in the upcoming draft. And maybe he goes earlier. Kind of like how Chris Johnson this past year, who was picked out of San Diego State, was a big riser throughout the process, but was a little bit unheralded. I think that Mayo could do a lot of those things. I love a lot of things about this team, man. The experience is the bigger reason to buy in. And it isn't always an easy investment for me when I'm picking which teams to put stock in to perform well. It's easy for me to do it confidently for a team that has guys that have played a lot of football. It's a tale as old as time for things that have worked.
Chris Johnson Jr. is also in this running back room, and I just wanted to...
I forgot about that.
I just wanted to bring this up. Shout out to Chris Johnson. You know, Chris Johnson came on... Him and Lindell White came on AYS 3.5 years ago when his son took a visit to LSU under Brian Kelly. God, it stinks to hear about Chris Johnson Sr.
Yeah. God, I met him quite a few times.
Because they did the podcast and
they used to come to the are you mixing him up with Chris Johnson Jr. is at Clemson. Or is there than one Chris Johnson Jr.?
I thought Chris Johnson Jr., his son, went to Houston.
He was at SMU and then he because I know that there's more than one.
Yeah, look, I can put Chris Johnson Jr. back up to Mekhi Hughes. Maybe there is more than one Chris Johnson. I thought his son wound up going to Houston. I could be wrong.
Wait, I think that we're... Chris Johnson Jr. is actually not related to Chris Johnson.
Oh, okay. I thought that was his son. It's not Chris Johnson Jr.?
Uh-uh. No, I remember seeing this. I remember thinking the same thing.
Regardless.
I
thought that was his son. I mean... He was in LSU.
A lot of people do think that. And I remember somebody pointing that out during the season. His son
did go take visits to Tulane and LSU like 2 years ago.
I think he does have a son. Chris Johnson Jr. It's a separate player. Okay. It's a different player.
I still hate that the ALS thing. All right, you want to look at the schedule here?
Yeah, let's pull it up. Going through their schedule. There should be wins, games that I think that they should be able to come away with victories. Oregon State Southern at Georgia Southern versus Cincinnati. They're tough matchups that I think should be able to win, but they're going to have to play as best as they can. UCF at Kansas State, at Colorado, at West Virginia versus Baylor. And I know that some of those you could probably disagree with me on. Toss-up games I have at Texas Tech, as in the games that could go either way, possibly potentially likely lose. I don't think that they're going to beat Texas Tech, but I think they beat Oklahoma State, and I think that they could potentially beat Utah, but that is going to be a tough game on the road.
Yeah, I look at the Texas Tech game week 3. Do we look at them and say, hey, they finally been able, you know, Willie Fritz has done it again. That's going to be a primetime game. It's on a Friday night, by the way. So we will see. I mean, I to your point, I at this point would probably still take Texas Tech. But to what you were saying earlier, like going to Utah, I do think Oklahoma State's going to be a lot better. It's going to be a tough little schedule for them here. Can they maneuver will be the question. You got a lot of road games. You got to go to Utah. The end of the season, you got a Friday night game versus Colorado on November 13th. That game is on a Friday. By the way, it's at 9:15 Central Standard Time. That is late. That is late on a Friday night. We will see. But look, I think that this is I think this is a 10-2 team. I really do. I think they could slip up to Texas, but I think they're good enough to beat the rest of these teams on their schedule. 9-3, 10-2. I think they're going to be a Big 12 contender. That's where I see them at.
I agree. I think 10-2 is an easy prediction to kind of like map them and place them somewhere. I think that there is a possibility, though, that some of these teams do catch them. Like, you know, maybe they lose to a Baylor because DJ Lagway is really good. Maybe West Virginia sneaks up on them. Maybe Avery Johnson plays really well with Colin Klein back calling plays for him, and they lose four games. They go 8-4. But I think that it's been established that Houston is a high floor team now that Willie Fritz is there.
By the way, people are calling you a homer for the Knicks hat, and I'm in the chat defending you. I'm like, you've been wearing this hat before they even want to. Yeah,
this is a typical bandwagon jumper. Now he's a Knick. What do you mean I'm a bandwagon jumper? I've only root for Notre Dame. I've been a Knicks fan. I have a Kristaps Porzingis T-shirt. I don't want to hear anyone tell me that I am a bandwagon. I'm also a Giants fan. What are we talking about here?
I was about to defend you in the chat there. All right, before we get out of here, Joe, we're going to do this segment of Dark Horse Heisman Trophy contenders. We're going to pick two. So this isn't like your typical, and maybe some of the names that we're going to come up with, people are like, well, that's not really a dark horse, but it kind of is in the grand scheme of things. I kick it over to you first. When you look at potential Dark Horse Heisman winners, who do you think could be that and why?
So first of all, we have an interesting trend, and CBS Sports published an article on this that sparked this segment. We have a trend in the last 2 years where Travis Hunter had 35-1 odds to win it in 2024. Fernando Mendoza had 60-1 odds. So there were long odds for both these guys. And for the last five winners were quarterbacks. So I tried to lean into that as much as possible for who I was going with. The first guy that I'm going with is not a quarterback, but I think in a lot of ways to Travis Hunter can take the college football world by storm after he has captivated everybody's attention. That being Malachi Toney from Miami. Now, I think that he fits the conversation of being a dark horse because he's not a favorite. His quarterback, Darian Mensah, is a favorite. He's one of the guys in the top five of most odds right now, depending on the book that you go to. Nobody's giving Malachi Toney that same love. I think that if there's a world where Miami gets to a national championship again, it's going to be because Malachi Toney takes a step after he had an unbelievable year. And he's one of these guys that's a kick returner and a receiver. So he could put up ridiculous production with touchdowns as a return man and as a wide receiver. I think that Malachi Toney fits that mold of the type of receiver that is capable of winning the award. It is hard to come by. But if there's a world where either this year, maybe even next year, that Toney puts up some Devontae Smith type numbers, some crazy ass numbers, and we've got some decent quarterbacks because there's so many to pick from, it wouldn't surprise me if Toney ended up winning the Heisman.
I agree that he's a great player. We've had two since 1990 at wide receiver, or three since, you know, it would just be tough. I think he's a special player. You know, scuba comes to mind in the playoffs. Scuba. Yes, my son does the scuba too. When he does something good, he does scuba. All right. I do wonder how teams are going to attack Malachi Toney this year. I think he's got a much better quarterback to get him the football, which is even more dangerous and more scary. I could see it. I 1,000% can see it. Like I told you, we're about to go on this little journey of going back and watching Ole Miss offensive games. We're starting it next week. I went back and watched that Ole Miss and Miami game. Good Lord. The screen game, the tackles that he broke to get first downs. This dude, baby Jesus, you know, the nickname, he is special, man. He is a great player. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And I like Malachi Toney a lot. All right. My dark horse player here. Can I do you a little blind testing? Now, I know that you know my guys. Okay, but I'm going to read off two quarterback stats for you, and I want you to tell me who these two quarterbacks are. Mm-hmm. One quarterback completed 66% of his passes for 3,700 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. The other quarterback had completed 72% of his passes, 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. What two quarterbacks am I talking about?
Jaden Maeva
is correct.
And Julian Sain.
No. Dante Moore is the second quarterback. And I asked myself a simple question. If I just read off the stats to you, if I just said, hey, here are two of these quarterbacks. They have the same amount of yards. They have the same amount of touchdowns. They have the same amount of interceptions. What's the difference? Now, you would say, well, Blake, now that we know the quarterbacks, Dante Moore has a higher ceiling, all the blah, 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 blah. Okay, but you didn't have that to start off with. And that's why I'm going with Jaden Maiava. Joe, this dude had 30-plus touchdowns last year with 3,700 yards and went off. And I think that as I look at USC, I understand that Mekhi Lemon is not there any longer. Is Mac Bowen going to be able to do some stuff at tight end? Fine. But I think this running game for USC is going to be really freaking good. And with that offensive line being really good, I think it sets so many things up for what can help Jaden Maiava and opening things up on the boundary in the slot for him. He's got to reduce those turnovers. We all understand that. This is a quarterback award. And I think if USC goes and makes some noise, I don't know if he wins it, but he's certainly going to be in that contention. Joe, we talked about a player that was in contention last year in Dante Moore. They had the same exact stats. If you took the logo and you took the name and you took the face off the player, nobody would have known. So I asked the question, what was the difference with Jaden Maiava? And here's the crazy thing about that. Oregon had two more games than Maiava, or Moore had two more games than Maiava did. At the end of the year, I mean, both guys were on the same track when we look at it. I think Maiava doesn't get a lot of the credit that he deserves. He's not in the top 15 of the predictions on Kalshi, as an example. He's got a 2% chance to win the Heisman. That's why I look at him and say Jaden Maiava could be the dark horse here because of how good I think Lincoln actually has done. By the way, did you know that they had six of the top 10 recruits in the state of California? I was looking at this the other day.
Yeah.
Lincoln's kind of done some good things here. I would go with Jaden Maiava as my number one guy.
I also think that the big thing that's forgone, despite Maiava having a couple bad games and some turnovers, he was the most efficient quarterback in the country last year. He was number one in EPA per dropback. He is in a system that is only going to accentuate his skills. I think that he is going to be able to put up big numbers once again. The other guy that I wanted to bring up that is a quarterback also was very high in EPA per dropback this past year, that being Damond Williams. He was 13th in EA paper dropback, extremely efficient. I've said this in the preview, and I'm doubling back on it. He has the exact profile that you look for a quarterback who could win the Heisman Trophy. He is shifty. He is compact. He is very creative as a playmaker. He is the type of guy that could give teams major headaches. I think that if Washington takes the potential leap that they go 10-2, maybe they're a playoff team, it's going to be because he plays really well. If they get to the playoff, I think that Williams is going to be a finalist. He has the typical skills that we see, the typical play style of being really hard to tackle and really good at throwing on the run, really good at improvising, that leads to guys becoming major storylines in the sport and then potentially winning the award. It's very Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Johnny Manziel-ish in the way that he plays the game. It's hard to tackle. When guys are hard to tackle, they make big plays. I think that year two in this system, you're going to get a chance for him to put up some crazy stats.
Don't disagree with you here. Before we get out, the one thing I'd say on Williams is I just worry about the guys around him. You know, like you need guys around you to win the Heisman. Like look at Fernando Mendoza. Look at Jaden Daniels. I forget who won it three years ago.
Caleb. 3 years ago was Jaden Daniels. Caleb Williams was four. Bryce Young was five.
Well, no, we're forgetting Travis Hunter. But Travis Hunter was a unique scenario. I mean, you need guys around you. That would be my only thing. Last one as we wrap up here. I'm going to go Keelan Russell of Alabama. That's a dark horse because we don't even know who the starter is going to be. It might be Austin Mack. I don't want to overreact to spring games, so I'm not going to. If that kid continues to do some of the stuff that we've seen over the last couple of months, this kid's gonna be really good. He's gonna be really good. I don't know what else to say other than what my eyeballs are telling me. very talented, gifted young man who I think, quite frankly, is better than Milroe, better than Ty Simpson, better than Mac, and it's going to finally be the quarterback that you look at and say, well, Kalen DeBoer finally has one because he can run. He's got a big arm, highly accurate. I think the kid's going to start, and he's going to do some good things at Bama.
I like that pick, too, and it was one that I actually was going to use for one of my picks because he has the traits. He is very, very rare athlete. He was highly recruited. I don't think – if he doesn't win it this year, I think that he's going to be a finalist by the time he's done with his college career. He is in the right system with the right physical attributes to be a stellar player in college football.
We shall see. All right, USA time. I'm about to go live during the soccer game. I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, good luck to that. I'm sure that everybody else they watch. We had a couple of two quick super chats.
Okay. Fran, what's up, Fran? An AYS listener became a member on the YouTube channel. Thank you so much. And he says, y'all should play the video game against fans as a fun thing.
I want to do a dynasty with our members, but the problem, I have to think about how we're going to do that because it's hard. We don't have a lot of time during the season, so it gets a little hard to do something like that.
I never really play. Yeah.
We'll talk about it. We'll figure it out. Maybe we'll do it, but it's a good thought.
Maybe they should fly me back to New York to beat Joe's
ass. Okay, that's not happening.
See y'all soon. Peace.